We want no songs about the gallant exile. Those who die heroic deaths are long remembered, thieves and drunks and cravens soon forgotten.
Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we thought it best to rename and rebrand ourselves freshly just in time for the game to do the same with its second edition. Tune in each episode for your dose of strategy, discussion, jokes, and good old geek culture. A huge thank you goes out to George R.R. Martin, Fantasy Flight Games, Card Game DB, and you, our loyal and new listeners. Check us out at www.whitebookpodcast.com and contact us on Facebook and Twitter, or email us at contact@whitebookpodcast.com. This CC licensed music is Townfish by Spinozar.
Hey, no one's going to remember me.
Yep. Man, Aaron fits under all three of these
categories. Thief, drunk, and craven.
It takes a queer sort of courage to admit it, though.
I mean, if there's one thing that's true about me, I'm queer.
Nobody caught on that I was throwing a Jon Snow paraphrase out there?
I got it. It's just once I call myself queer. It's one of my favorite words. I'm actually a GSA advisor at work, and like queer, some people are cool with, some people aren't. So we constantly have discussions. I'm just like, but I really like the word. Can I please have it?
I don't think you can have it.
I mean,
I'm hearing you as Randall in Clerks 2 now. No, it's cool. We're taking it back.
Exactly. I love it. Hardest I've ever laughed in a movie theater.
Oh, it's a good one.
Really drunk, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, welcome back to this week's episode of The White Book with myself, Will Lentz, generally known as Kenan, obviously Aaron Pulse Glazer, and a new guest host this time. Correct me if I'm wrong, but is this your first time on the show?
Yes, it is.
Ooh, listen to that sultry tone. Why don't you introduce yourself?
My name is Corey.
Corey Faherty?
No.
Oh, okay,
no.
Wait. You're Corey Gulch then, right?
Well, not so much as that I'm not, no.
What?
To give you guys just some stats here. At Gen Con Joust, to this day, I'm currently 0-12, so just to give you some solid stats on where I sit in the Thrones world, that's where I am. So,
well, thanks for reassuring the listeners that turn up looking for some solid tournament reporting and insight. I'm sure they will tune in to this week's Beyond the Wall for that content. Possibly banter behind the throne. I don't know. Maybe even some Summer is Coming, mm-hmm. But not so much The White Book.
I'm like a champ, but if a champ was the complete opposite of what a champ is, that's what I am.
Corey found out what he was, and he does excel at that. So
I hear he convinced you not to win Kingslayer.
Yeah, pretty much. Turns out I should have taken that Martell Banner of the Lion deck that I had been playing a couple times against him before Kingslayer.
You were beating the crap out of me. But again, like, that's hard to gauge exactly how good something is when it beats the crap out of me. That was your big mistake, was testing on me. So,
well, who knows? Who knows how it would have gone down? But I will definitely say I've been really enjoying playing that deck now that it's gone through some more revisions, and I'll be taking it to the tourney portion of our kickoff night this Saturday. I'm not going to subject any demoers to playing against that to start out, but we'll see how it goes.
Well, good. Now I know what to build against.
Yeah, exactly. You're welcome.
I've got an idea. Hey, mini contest for listeners. I'm totally playing House Lannister at Red Saturday. Listeners can choose what banner.
Ooh.
Please don't. I think I'm going to limit it because there's almost no chance I'm bannering to the watch. But I'll post in the comments and you guys can all vote and decide for me. Whoever makes the best, I don't know, either vote or whoever makes the best argument, I'll do that.
Okay. How long of a timeline do folks have? You got to give them a date so they know when they need their entry by.
They have until next week's episode because the day after that will be the tournament.
Okay, so just in case you're listening to this out of order or something, that means you've got until November 27th, Black Friday.
And then I'll let you know how it goes.
Sweet.
Although I'm still building it. Cause...
You may not even know the last pieces of it until Black Friday now. You're going to be building that all week.
That's fine. I'm cool with that.
Okay.
I'm barely cocky about my 2.0 skills right now.
As much as anyone can be, you know.
All
good,
right.
Good portion of that goes down to the draw, but oh well.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, we've got a good bit of an episode coming up here. I think we're going to roll back around to some topics that at this point listeners have been waiting a couple weeks for us to wrap up and hit the other four houses in the core set here and kind of the top decks that we were discussing. But before we get to that, there are a couple other things that I wanted to draw attention to at the top of the episode here. One, of course, is going to be the winning deck list archive on the site. You'll find that under the tournaments tab at the top, and both the submission and the archive sections are there for both Joust and Melee. Aaron's running the Joust side. I'm running Melee. You can take a wild guess how many entries there are for each right now. But I do have, I believe it's GK Zukov, if I'm remembering right. That wound up being declared the winner of the second edition Melee at Worlds. I'll have that list up before long. So I know Melee hopefully has seen a little bit of a resurgence. I know I've heard a lot of popular good feedback on the new titles. So if you're running a Melee event, do make sure you jump on there, submit the winner of that. I want to make sure that we give it as equal a treatment as we can this time around for second edition.
Yeah, I don't care about Melee still, but
why I'm running the Melee section.
I update the Joust section basically every Sunday. This Sunday I didn't because I had the post all typed up. All I had to do was hit save and my cat wandered onto the screen and closed it. And then I didn't have the energy to do it again.
No.
So this Sunday we'll get 2 weeks worth of tournaments. I think we're at like 15 to 17, something along those lines. Next post.
Yep. And I've got most of the, card image tooltips, working again on the site. Had a bug with that for a while. So if you are there looking at the deck lists, most all the cards should be tagged with pop-ups so you can take a look and see what everything is if you don't remember it off the top of your head. Okay. Now, along with that, there's another type of tournament software offering that we have on the site. I've been trying to prop this on various different media and resources, and that is our event listing system. I feel it is really important to have kind of a central database that is searchable where people can list their events, their tournaments, their game nights and such, because frankly, FFG's system isn't great. They only list the store championship and regional type events. And while it's great to have that, it's not searchable and it doesn't help with local events, local game nights, player run larger ones like, say, Red Saturday and the like. So hop on. That's under the events tab on the White Book podcast. Or sorry, just whitebookpodcast.com. And feel free to submit your event there. You tag the location on Google Maps, make it easy for people to find. They can search and filter by distance from them and search out stuff in their own home city. So I would really love for this resource to hit a critical mass and for people to be able to use it. Plus, even if you don't delve in that far, in the right-hand column on the front page, the most recent five events or so are listed right there. Right now, that's about a week's worth of events, but hopefully as we get more things filling in, that'll just stay full over there.
So, a couple of weeks back on our episode, we covered four houses. We covered Greyjoy, Lannister, Baratheon, and Martell. We were super wrong about Martell. Thanks, Sam Bratz. But we covered these houses. We discussed what was good and bad about each, where we saw each going, and what they were going to do. What we're doing now is the next four houses. We're going to discuss what houses banner well. We're trying to focus on Corset. We know there's some more stuff coming out, but we'd rather not get too far ahead. So this will be looking at the Corset meta, what's good, what's worth bannering to in each of the next four houses, and what cards are key.
Sounds like a great game plan.
Let's do that.
We're starting with House Stark. House Stark, I feel like, is best with Greyjoy, Martell, and Lannister. With Greyjoy, it's this giant aggro deck. It handles control very well with Martell, and Lannister just helps it play a tempo game. All of them are effective for very different reasons. Weirdly, Stark is actually pretty solid on its own. I felt like it wouldn't be, but it ends up being good. Stark doesn't do anything great, but they have enough cheap, effective guys that they're good as a main or a banner, and they can handle almost everything to an extent.
They're fairly well-rounded. I still feel like they have a bit of a hole on the intrigue icon that's not filled particularly well yet. But they do have a solid range of stuff at different cost points, and a couple really solid standing effects that can help them face off against some of the really popular stuff at the moment. Baratheon, Fealty, you know, if they have the opportunity.
So as the skilled player that I am, so to me, like when I look at Stark, I see the stand effects and it makes me think of, okay, these guys probably enjoy going second, you know, defending some stuff and coming back. Mm-hmm. And looking at it when it's paired with Greyjoy, which is how I've seen it, I feel like the most in our meta, and Greyjoy is one that can like to be aggro, maybe go first some more. Is that like pushing the military 100%? Do you like, for me, like if I'm building that deck, what do I want to avoid like as a pitfall there, I guess? Because Stark Greyjoy is the one that I feel like I'm seeing a lot.
Stark Greyjoy needs either a kill event or ice or something along those lines really early. It's okay. Very powerful if it can get that two claim jump and board position, and it sort of ends the game by like turn two or three. Mm-hmm. If the game goes long, that lack of draw is going to kill you.
Yeah, and Stark is in a trickier place with that draw than some of the other houses, since their draw location, the Gates of Winterfell, let's just say heavily encourages you to be Stark only. Be that fealty or no agenda is up to you, though. Probably fealty is a better call for them.
Okay. Fealty is the only place I'd run like Warm Rain right now, but like Warm Rain can be extremely powerful. It's a card that is generally not seen very much, so it's very easy to forget that it even exists.
Well, and the timing on it is so key. I mean, I don't think we can harp on that too much, especially for any the 1.0 listeners coming along for the ride here, is, you know, the timing's reversed now, and you lose that challenge and play like Warm Rain before anything gets discarded from your hand. And that is just so awesome, so, as long as you've got the Dire Wolf to trigger it, which I feel kind of iffy about at the moment with just the Dire Wolves that are available, because the one I want to run the most of is usually knelt for some other reason anyway.
So I really
that being Grey Wind.
That being eating people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or him being knelt by my opponent's card effects so that he doesn't eat people.
Right, right.
So good. Grey Wind is so good, but in a way that you can't run too many of him, which is a thing I appreciate in design space. Like, if you run three Grey Wind, he's going to get tears. Like, he's going to get killed. But running one or two Grey Wind, he's a very good card. Stark has a very good matchup against Baratheon. That Baratheon matchup is one of the key reasons to play them, since Barra is still really popular. But as we saw at Worlds, the other really popular deck is Targaryen. The ultimate problem with the Targaryen matchup is that Stark has a lot of chuds, a lot of unique chuds that you want to run more than one of, and they are very, very easy to kill with the Plaza. Once you get rid of those, you're starting to eat into your big guys, and once that happens, you're in a lot of trouble. The only answer I found for that, really, is running like Warm Rain against Targ. So even though I don't like the card and I think it forces you to run, it's a mediocre card that forces you to run other bad cards, if you can get rid of Dany that way early, it pays for itself.
I could see that, definitely. Really help offset that advantage. Plus, you're knocking out a good chunk of Greyjoy, or sorry, of Targaryen's card draw, which is going to help Stark stay in that game.
So do you not look to try and take care of Plaza, I guess?
If once we get more location hate, mm-hmm. I think that the Puts of the Torch is a little bit of a trap card, given how limited space is right now. I like Put to the Torch, but I really want something else.
Well, the thing about Put to the Torch and Stark, while I feel they are a fairly military-focused house, they don't have a ton in the way of strength bumps, like, say, Tywin or Robert, that can really push way up on strength to get something like that off. Now, Corey, I know you're about to try and defend that Stark event that I'm forgetting the name of now.
For the North?
For the North. But
for
that is
North?
A terrible card.
It's good in Filthy, because you need to.
How is it good in Filthy?
Because you don't have enough Stark cards, and it helps you cycle through them.
I don't know if that makes it good. It may just be necessary.
Yeah, okay. Needed. It's not good. It's acceptable. Like, I dislike it. I don't hate it.
If it wasn't only Stark, only military.
I agree. I agree completely. It's super limited. And Stark actually has a few less military icons than you would think at first glance. Mostly because I hate the Warhost, or whatever they're called.
Oh, the four-cost non-kneeling army? As long as there's a war plot?
Yeah, I don't like them at all.
I think they're all right. There's a lot of war plots floating around.
There are a lot of war plots.
Mm.
And one of them lets you do two military challenges.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even some of the others, heads on spikes. I love its ability to kind of help compensate for the intrigue hole in Stark by letting them go ahead and, hit back at the opponent's hand without necessarily having to actually win the intrigue challenges.
Yeah, but everyone outdraws you by so much. I also am, like, Kyle from New York started doing this, and I think it's an actually really cool idea. Running three cat.
She's your best intrigue icon.
Unless you put her to the sword, she's never going to be like Dracarys.
Well, that's fair.
So she's not going to be Dracarys unless you're taking icons. She's not going to get tears. She's relatively safe unless you claim her.
Yeah.
Put her to the sword or claim her.
Or your other stuff gets claimed and then she gets marched to the wall.
Right, right. They're the usual options, but she's got a few more protections than almost everyone.
Yeah, that's a good point about the Dracarys. I hadn't slowed down hard enough to think about that particular protection afforded by her ability. That helps her durability a lot.
I mean, even if she's... And she protects other people from Dracarys, too, and challenges she's in. So,
right.
I run a fair bit of Syrios training in Stark.
Really?
It's good.
I mean, who else are you giving the military icon to?
I can sack Arya's dupe.
Yeah?
I've stuck it on...
You're track. Giving it to Bran, and then discarding Bran to cancel something?
Yep, and then you just get it back. It's nice for chump challenges on the little one-drop guys.
I guess you can drop it on Sansa, or the Winterfell steward. There's literally four characters.
So, when I main house Stark, it tends to be either Martell, and it won't see much use in Martell anymore, or Lannister, and with Lannister, it's phenomenal on Tyrion.
Oh, well, yeah, if you can drop that on Tyrion to go ahead and make him a Tricon, that's solid. Though Tricon. He does get used on the intrigue fairly often if you need that gold for any sort of challenge for his effects.
He doesn't have to participate.
Well, he himself doesn't, but someone needs to initiate that intrigue challenge, and he's generally a likely candidate, what with his stealth and all. And if you're pairing it with Main House Stark, they're not contributing a lot on that intrigue front either, making it likely that Tyrion is your best option for that intrigue.
I mean, Sansa, Catelyn, what's his name?
Catelyn.
Jaime.
Well, I'm talking out of Stark. I mean,
right, but if you're running Tyrion, you're obviously running Stark, some Lannister cards.
Yeah, Lannister is contributing some. So that's what I'm saying. If Lannister is part of, or sorry, if Tyrion is part of the Lannister contingent that you're adding to have the intrigue icon, there's a good chance Tyrion is the guy that needs to make that intrigue challenge.
Fair enough. Unless someone challenged you, but fair enough. There's options.
Well, yeah, there's options. It's not, you know, 100% one thing or another.
So
I don't know.
Oops, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say one thing I do want to address about Stark and kind of the broad strokes. We kind of hit on this type of thing with Greyjoy earlier in the prior episode on this topic, and talked for a moment about how Greyjoy is looking like a really strong melee house due to the ability to kind of capitalize on those unopposed challenges, much like you could in first edition. That was a popular long-standing deck type. They're almost certainly the rushiest house in the environment the way it is right now. But I would also say, as far as melee goes, Stark may be my like secondary go-to house in melee.
Oh, that stand is so solid in melee.
Yeah. If you can land a Robb Stark on the board, suddenly like the melee landscape changes when people can't bother to like military you or target your stuff with a kill effect, because suddenly now you have everyone available to you again.
Well, and if you can get yourself in the fourth position too, where you can sit back, defend, stand back up, and just, you know, then act last and really put it to everyone, find those unopposed challenges. I mean, there's just a lot of opportunity with stand.
Yeah.
In melee in general.
Yeah, even if you don't have Robb, just Eddard by himself. Like, people don't want to challenge into that.
Yeah. And you can also, you know, take the redirect, and when people try and play around you, redirect into yourself or whatever to get your stand. True? Yeah.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. They also like the Master of Ships fairly well to get a couple military claims off at different people.
Ooh, cool. Okay.
And of course, hey, draw. Who doesn't love draw? But Stark would really love the extra draw.
Well, there is that For the North card. So I'm just,
well, only until Chapter Pack 3. Chapter Pack 3, we get Roderick Cassell, and he should be a draw engine unto himself. Did you guys see the spoiler for Roderick?
Was he in the giant chunk that got dropped onto us over the weekend from the Polish distributor? I believe it was.
Czech, I want to say, but yes,
Czech. Yes, I believe you're.
I think he's 6-4 military power. Any unique Stark participating with him in a military challenge gains insight.
Ooh.
Yeah. So even with two characters, that's two cards. Like Arya and him, if you can win it, you're getting two cards.
So that's pretty great.
So he changes Stark's outlook a great deal.
Oh.
I mean, for now, Stark key cards. Arya and Bran are huge. Like, they're the reason to banner to Stark, and they're a major reason to banner or to use Stark. Stealth is still at a premium, and at least until Serio comes out, another guy who was spoiled in that pack.
And Arya's the cheapest stealth in the game, right? Or no, sorry, Wendemir is. But Arya has two icons.
Military stealth, yeah.
Yeah.
Bran is also, Hand's Judgment should be bad, but there's most of the removal is event form, so Hand's Judgment ends up being really good because removal is king, and Bran is set-upable Hand's Judgment. He just means, like, your opponent's going to sit there with all those events in hand. Ice and Winter is Coming are some of the, since Direct Kill is King, as just said, are fantastic. And Grey Wind, too, is really, really good at killing stuff and kneeling other stuff so you can get other effects and challenges through. Like, I've won a lot of intrigue challenges as Stark just by going first with Grey Wind, kneeling their intrigue, and then pushing through.
I mean, Grey Wind is just so versatile. The Intimidate I wind up finding a use for a little less often, but being able to eat off the the claim chuds and the income. Like, so good.
Which, especially, like, if people are bannering, like, you know, there's six of those in there. And they're, you know, like, the odds of someone putting one of those on the table almost every turn is so good, you know?
Yeah. Ups your ability to leverage the march to the wall in another turn or two. Yeah, I really dig it.
Don't underestimate the plus two strength either on ice. It ends up being helpful for ice and put to the sword to be in the same turn, which is fun.
That actually
like auto win.
Screwed me at the Kingslayer, or not Kingslayer, sorry, War of the Five Kings. Yep. I went to a lot of effort to bait out an ice from an opposing player. I think, I'm trying to remember now, is there a Ryan from Wisconsin?
Maybe.
Started with an R, so I apologize if you happen to be listening or someone that knows you is, and I'm butchering your name. But yeah, went to a lot of work to try and bait his ice use so I could treachery it and then be able to get around him on the next turn and crush him. Then he just marshaled another one, so that was rough. Yeah, that two strength was what did it, too. Just couldn't find a way around it.
Baited it out, and then it beat you.
Yup.
Yes. So what does Stark do right now? It kills stuff and stands, which is a fairly awesome combo. And killing stuff and standing is aggro, but it also, in the future, seems to lead to things like Rush, like for Tyrell, as long as they get a little bit more renown. I mean, I'm cheating a little bit for that. That's a late ad, because we got that, there's another Stark spoiler that for the first three plots of the game, they get some character that gets renowned.
Whew. So. I missed that one, too. I guess I didn't. I must have missed a batch of those spoiler cards. I'm going to have to dig back into them.
Stark also gets mini combos that are supposed to be Nedley, like Shog and Bran, or like Lewin and Septim Ordained.
Shaggy Dog and Bran?
That's what I meant. No, not yeah. Shaggy Dog. Is it Shaggy Dog? No, it's Summer.
No, Summer. Yeah.
Summer. Whoops. Yeah. Sorry, Shaga just really threw me off there. I guess the combos are a little Shaga, but they're definitely more Nedley in their flavor. Though I like that FFG seems to really be trying to push a Nedley angle in House Stark. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree.
They were always kind of the faction that Ned's played in first edition anyway, for whatever reason. Easier to fit all the interesting uniques they liked into a deck, I suppose.
Yeah, it's probably a good way to hook more new players, too. So.
Yeah. Yeah, you remember that bit when Summer brought Bran back from the dead in the books? Ambushed right in and brought him back out?
I mean, no, but I remember when Summer saved Bran from being killed.
Oh, okay.
The same
well, that's...
I believe your event, Will, is in the footnotes.
I missed.
Oh, okay.
So we kind of already discussed all the Stark sleeper cards. Like, Grey Wind is really good. Cat's really good. Sarah's training helps. Like, War Marine is going to get better and better. And Sansa not only puts a timer on the game by gaining power, but, and I've seen people put the power on her multiple times. No, when she stands, she puts that power on your house, which is just means when you need to kill her, when she's claimed soap, when wildfire hits, when something hits, she can die no problem, and you've still basically banked all that power she's given you.
Yeah, it's nice to be in a much sturdier spot.
Any final Stark thoughts?
No, I think that hits most of my thoughts. I think they're kind of a well-positioned, I almost feel kind of a jack-of-all-trade spot at the moment that I expect is going to really kind of crack open as we get more stuff added to the pool.
Yeah, okay. Next up, we've got the powerhouse right now, House Targaryen. Targaryen's a monster alone, fealty, no agenda. It works with Lions, Suns, and Roses. Alone, it's largely about Dany. She's kind of good. Like, she keeping her on the board makes everything a lot easier. She can be stood at least four or five different ways, and the deck works great. Lannister adds a bunch of mini combos. Drogo works well with Jaime if you're running a couple of each. Illyrio works fantastically with Tyrion, gives stands for Dany tricks. And then the Suns offer just extra strength to that intrigue. They can drag people in for Dracarys with the, what's it called, Paramore?
Yeah,
the Dornish Paramour, which is such a great play, and I think really messes with your opponent there as far as like what they get to do with initiative. Like, as soon as you have one of those paramours on the board in that pairing, like, now you just have to spend your time playing around that.
Agreed. So Tears of Lys is always great with confinement, but Martell also offers that if you've got Khal Drogo and Sunspear out, your opponent functionally can no longer make military channels. 2-2 claim military will wreck almost anyone's face. Lastly, we have Tyrell, the Rose deck, which is mostly using Tyrell, as far as I'm aware, for a bunch of good, cheaper characters so that you don't have to deal with a lot of the somewhat lesser Targaryen chud, and you get Marjorie as a bonus.
Marjorie's already really good, and you can combine the Handmaiden with her in a pinch. I don't know how often I want to sacrifice my Handmaiden to stand Dany, but there's probably situations where I'm willing to.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think this is probably another house that's really strong in Melee.
Agreed.
I know. I don't think we've really seen it played well in Melee yet, but I think that it's just really got the pieces there to really stand up in Melee.
Yeah, I mean, like, Daenerys dissuades your opponents from sending their challenges at you, which is already sweet. Mm-hmm. They've got several stand effects from, you know, Illyrio to Waking the Dragon, which, as we said earlier, with Stark is huge in Melee. They've got Cheap Renown with Jorah, even if it's temporary. And I even think that Drogo is really solid in Melee. You know, if you've got the characters around, or at least the stand to initiate more challenges, split up that military attrition or really hammer someone that's in the lead,
mm-hmm.
I think that's a good spot to be in.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it allows you to do two things, too. If you're looking at, I need to slow someone down, but I also have an opportunity for an unopposed, you can now do both with a military challenge, you know?
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, speaking of that type of thing, you know what is even better about one of Targ's very best cards in the game right now? Actually, it's probably going to stay one of the best cards.
Varys?
Plaza of Punishment doesn't specify that the character you choose to kill has to be controlled by the person you won the power challenge against.
Also, wait, something else that's important with Plaza that a lot of people miss. You don't have to choose and kill someone. It's a -2 strength. If you
right.
lose a military or something and you're pretty sure that they have put to the sword, it's a really good use for it to make them not able to do that.
Yeah.
That's true.
Lots of options. It's a very, very good, very flexible card.
I like using it on 3-cost guys and then while I have Dany standing and then just rendering them useless for the phase.
Yeah. Dare them to forget and initiate a challenge.
Mm-hmm. Or defend or anything. I'm just like, oh, I'll take a bunch of
right.
Yeah. There is one more key Targ deck. Targ is fantastic for mini curve. Dracarys is probably the best kill in the game. And when you can combine Dracarys with literally any other removal, it just gets insanely powerful. Like the Targ Talani from that one New York launch.
So are there any plots that you guys would say, like, you think pair with Targ especially well, or Targ would especially avoid as opposed to some other houses? I haven't built any Targ yet out of the core, and I'm just kind of interested. I guess we haven't seen a lot down here. Mm-hmm. So.
I mean, I really think Power Behind the Throne actually goes pretty well with them. Make sure you keep your Dany active or have a couple military attacks available if you've got Drogo on the board.
Game of Thrones, too, is pretty good. They're a house that I either run double summons or double marched in almost exclusively. Double marched if I'm going extra heavy removal, because you can often get them down to that one character or only to where they have good characters left because you kill Chud so effectively.
Right.
Double summons just because Dany is not only your best character, she's your draw.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And if you're going all in on that military plan with Drogo and such, I mean, sneak attack is almost too perfect as your opener, right?
Yeah.
Mulligan for Drogo and then just beat down.
So a few weeks ago, we actually discussed this about how bad Calm Over Westeros was, or you and Roy did. And I said, it's fine. It's perfectly acceptable. As more and more.
I saw a lot of it at War of the Five Kings.
Because so many people are opening 5-11 too. If you can make it 5-11-1 and you get one challenge, all of a sudden it's a really bad plot.
Yeah.
Like, and you've still got the 5 gold counter and you get all 3 of your challenges. Like, I don't think it's a necessary play, but it protects you from 2 of the more dangerous plays in the meta. Turn 1, that 5-11-2 and that 2-7-1, the Sorry, I know people hate when I do
naval superiority.
Thank you, naval superiority. I'm sitting there going, blockade, blockade, blockade in my head.
Yeah, those name changes, they really really throw everything off.
Yeah, because calling a blockade would have been too easy for me.
Yeah.
Those are, I kind of like Home of Westeros, which I can't believe I'm saying. Okay, so next up, key cards.
I mean, Danny?
Well, Drogo, I don't dragons, know about Danny.
Aerys, Laza.
Laza, Dracarys, I mean, literally all the stuff we just talked about.
But two we haven't. Viserys is definitely key because attachment hate is rare, and attachment hate that doesn't just target conditions is even more rare.
And he's cheap.
Yeah,
but I mean, how many copies of him do you really run?
Three?
Yeah.
I mean,
and just shoot for bouncing or discarding him to your own marched?
I've got marched. I've got Fire and Blood. And lately, I've been running Waking the Dragon. Stand and return to your hand. It's Waking the Dragon is fantastic with Viserys, and this other card, the next one, Ser Jorah Mormont. Jorah, getting to use Jorah for a second challenge at 2 for 4 with military entry and renown. And then at the end of the phase, returning to your hand and tossing all your burn tokens. He's so cheap and easy to play that why not?
So do you think Illyrio gets stronger because there are more things we want to stand and more ways to maybe get that gold? Or do you think Illyrio gets weaker as we go on because there's more ways to stand things?
So stand is always good.
I think he gets better.
Yeah, stand is always good.
As we get more income, I think he'll only get easier to use.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's, I think, the single best reason to banner to Targ right now, too. Like, part of me is hoping that people pick a Lanny to Targ for me to play next beat because I've never tried it. And I kind of try and combo stuff with Illyrio.
I mean, the thought of just using Illyrio and Tyrion together, like, that's just so perfect to begin
with.
Pretty
great. Yeah, that's pretty great.
Oh, hey, I played about 50 games with the Hound since our last episode. The Hound is an A++++. Again, just thought you guys should know. He's completely fucking absurd and breaks all sorts of other, like, so good.
Well, I'm super excited about that. He is my favorite character from the books, and I was kind of disappointed when I came into First Ed, and Will was like, there's not a lot of great options for your favorite character here.
Well, now there is. He's like, First edition Khal Drogo on steroids. So versatile, so many things you can do. Right, let's move on back to Targ.
So, we won't blow too much time on that.
What Targ does right now, they burn things and aggro things, which is really good because both of those kill stuff. What they will do, I feel like, much like Barra can't get that much more Neil right now, Targ shouldn't get that much more burn right now. So I expect them to really push Dothraki. I mean, it makes sense given our sleeper card, or at least our first sleeper card, the Dothraki Sea.
The Sea, yeah. It's not going to take much more in the way of Dothraki to suddenly make Dothraki Sea awesome.
Yeah. Dothraki Sea is a surprise card. Once it has actually good triggers, is going to win some games.
Yeah, and if we ever get a Dothraki, and I'm sure we will, with some kind of like enters play trigger, oh yeah, Dothraki Sea.
Yeah.
You know, then is as tasty as can be.
Yeah. I feel like they're seeding it, and that's why I'm pretty sure that Dothraki is where we're going to go for the immediate future. Hopefully they don't keep pushing this attachment thing unless they give us, like, Lady Daenerys' Chambers.
Yeah. Let's see, what was the location in the first chapter pack?
I don't know. Vaes Dothrak.
Yes, there we go. Vaes Dothrak. You really need some kind of recursion or a good reason to be running an even higher than normal for second edition amount of attachments to make that really useful.
Yeah, I mean, even if they make that, like, return a non-terminal attachment to your hand, like Lady Daenerys Chambers, that'd be totally great, but we need something. For a character that does that, something. Whatever. Targ needs something to do with attachments. Otherwise, just stop giving us weird attachment things and give us stuff back. Any final Targ thoughts?
It's a good house. In general, I'm interested to see how the meta kind of shakes out since we saw that big explosion of Targ at War of the Five King to try and kind of counter the Vera fealty stuff. Between the two of them, they were about 50% of the field. So I hope as we've got this new chapter pack and hopefully have another one ASAP that things kind of balance out from there.
I mean, people can play Targ and Barra because they're fairly easy for new players and Greyjoy, but I think every single house has T1 decks, has decks that can win a major tournament. Maybe Night's Watch, but I'm slowly being convinced. Although, that's our next house, so let's wait till we get there. Any other thoughts on Tark?
That's me.
Yeah. All right, on to the Night's Watch. They mini curve particularly well with almost anyone because they have some of the best draw in the game and they have a reasonable amount of intrigue. Greyjoy, Targ, Tyrell, Barrow, Lannister, Martell, even a little bit of Fealty. But more and more, what's happening on Octagon, which is sort of blowing my mind, the defense theme actually seems to kind of sort of be working.
You know, it was a couple weeks ago that you guys really kind of harped on how much you preferred going second and how much control you felt that gave you over the game. And, you know, Night's Watch really enjoys going second. And, you know, more cards come and they have more ways to take advantage of going second, you know, like, heaven forbid they get some real control or something. You know, I could see cards coming that could really kind of break that. Having played it, you know, last weekend, I was just really surprised at how fun it was to kind of just involve yourself in challenges you knew you were going to lose to get the wall going. But it was kind of really enjoyable living on that edge of trying to be sure your icon spread was out there and having enough to really just make sure your wall was working.
And that's the trick with them in a lot of ways. Whether you're going, you know, that wall defense route, or even if you're trying something different, like kind of a mini curve aggro or something, is keeping that icon spread out of the Night's Watch. Because, I mean, they have a decent spread, but many of their cards are monocons, which can kind of hamper some of your options in how you're wanting to commit to different things on attack or defense, and can sometimes kind of complicate your choices on something like claim if you don't have Maester Aemon out, or, you know, you get hit by a March to the Wall or something.
Oh, yeah. It's not my kind of deck. Like, Night's Watch isn't my thing, but... And defense wasn't going to work as long as Neil was the thing that was everywhere. But with a lot less Neil, this gets significantly better. They also really need a couple good bigger guys, because their two big guys are just not good cards.
Man, they barely need a push at that end, I think. Because at the lower end, they've already got like two of the best card advantage engines in the game in Messenger Raven and Maester Aemon, and now that, or sorry, three, they've got Samwell Tarly too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and now that you've got the ability in the first chapter pack to use Here to Serve to get Aemon on command as early as you want him, you know, I don't think they need too much more to leverage that.
First snow is going to be bad for them, whereas like all the come to effect things that help Martell are going to be really good. Tossing all their guys back to hand is going to really hurt.
Yeah,
it's going to be interesting as the game goes on how they manage the, because like you were saying, when there's so much Neil out there, it's really hard to play a defense deck. And if they continue this defense theme, like there's going to be more control in the game. Like the game will get more control, and the harder you make it to get that icon spread there, the harder it's going to be to play Night's Watch. And obviously, there'll probably be other deck types for Night's Watch, but it will be very interesting to see how that archetype develops as control expands.
Okay, let's go key cards.
I mean, I think I already hit on a few of them in my list.
Aemon, Castle Black, Ghost, Ranging Party. And can we just... The wall is actually good, which blows my mind, but the Messenger...
Pretty decent.
The Messenger Raven is so good. Like, Messenger Raven makes everything come together so well.
Yeah. It does, but it also really, I think, cements Night's Watch as maybe the only house that really, really cares about the existence of the reserve value. I mean, sure, most everybody is going to have to chuck a card or two, turn one of the game, maybe one some other time, but Night's Watch has to be constantly aware of that.
How do you guys feel about meager contribution right now? Does it?
I like it a lot.
Yeah.
Just old works really well for me usually.
I like it, but I'm kind of torn. I feel like if you're going to use it, that you need to be going pretty whole hog on that kind of theme. And I like that if you're using the other handful of denial cards that are available right now to just keep throwing your opponent off the game. One random steal. Otherwise, I mean, you can mess up your opponent's plans with it, but I think it's much more hit or miss to do that correctly on, you know, one or two turns out of the game.
So, I still don't like Jon Snow and Longclaw, but I've come around on the wall. And the absolute key card for the defense decks, takers, guesses?
Gas of Black?
Nope. Important, but not key.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Benjen.
Benjen, yeah. Fair enough.
Just ignore all stealth with your Rangers. And by the way, the Ranging Party, big surprise given their name, are Rangers. So now you've got two military power icons that can, like, you just throw one in front of each challenge, but you need to keep Benjen on the board. It's so important. Yeah. A Milton Benjen wrecks your day.
You know, if you are building Night's Watch, and this is kind of a shame, but if you're building this defense, like, honestly, it's not hard to cut Jon Snow from that deck.
Oh, no. It's not at all.
Run him. Any of these versions, I don't think he gets played. He's a very different deck.
Yeah.
You know what's an interesting thing about Night's Watch at large that I was reminded of again just now when you mentioned Milk of the Poppy in connection with Benjen Stark? Mm-mm. He's almost the only thing of theirs that can actually have Milk of the Poppy played on it.
Yep, I'm sure that's on purpose.
Yeah, because almost everything else is no attachments or no attachments except weapon. And honestly, you know, the way the environment is shaping up, like, that is more of a boon than a burden, so to speak.
Yeah. So what do they do well right now? They play little guys, draw, and if you build specifically for it, they defend. What are they going to do? Seems like the same things. Jon Snow needs something to make him viable. Don't know what that's going to be, but something.
Something else to give them an offensive edge, but I don't know what that might be. The previewed cards we've seen so far all seem to really lean that defensive direction and seem to be giving some very interesting boosts to that side of things. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to think about because one of the kind of balancers for the Night's Watch is that you're going to defend all this stuff and you're going to get all these little guys out, but you're going to have to kneel a bunch to defend, which gives you less to attack back with. You know, I'd love to say, like, if we could get a stand there, boy, that'd be really nice, but is that going to be too much for Night's Watch when part of their balance is having to kneel to defend? You know?
What I just thought of is perhaps with Targaryen, and you can use Illyrio for that.
Yeah.
They've got, like, everything but Jon is so cheap, it might take a while to get going. But if you can get it going, that should end games fast.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's probably way too expensive. Forget I said that. Leaper cards?
You know, I think Longclaw is going to be one. I think that Renown is going to really be something that adds up.
Yeah, and especially important in a defense deck.
I think the events get better as the game goes on. Take the Black and the Sword in the Darkness aren't great right now, but I feel like they can be. Especially Sword in the Darkness because it's so cheap. I feel like a lot of people are going to be leading with chump challenges eventually, trying to probe that little power challenge just to, you know,
get
going. And then you defend like a monster and you're like, you can't make any more challenges. And they just go, oh. Okay, your challenges then.
I think Take the Black is the one out of the two of those that I'm more excited for, though. Like, the larger the card pool goes, the better. Like, the better the non-uniques get, so the more of them that your opponents play, and also the higher quality of non-uniques that you can take, thus, you know, meaning a potential bigger swing. So, as long as you can keep it in your hand, that's the trick.
I don't think that's the trick. I think that if six cost non-uniques become a big thing, taking the black starts seeing a ton of play, and that pushes those non-uniques back down. Like, I think it becomes meta, answer, meta, and then just everyone drops them all. And that's an FFG stated goal. They want more uniques, more of a focus. So that's one way to really get that. Okay. Any final Night's Watch thoughts?
I think that covers me.
Yeah, I don't think so.
All right. On to House Tyrell?
I think so.
The final house. Right? Am I really bad at alphabet? No, I know.
Nope. There you go.
How's Tyrell?
Home stretch.
You're an alphabet expert.
Night's Watch was second to last because they are the Night's Watch.
I did wonder about that. Yeah, it took me a moment to catch it when you sent the list.
it was the order I found on whatever I started with to make the list. And I was like, you know what, whatever, and then I just went with it. All right. House Tyrell seems great with Lannister, but I really don't think it is. I think it's significantly better in the reverse. In that, like, the Tyrell got the cheat things into play, tricks for Lannister don't work especially well, and Tyrell wants, like, an extra power icon, and Jaime doesn't help with that. It's just a lot of different little things that I think that means it doesn't really add up to what it should be. I love Fealty and Tyrell. I think it's one of my favorite Fealty houses. It's a very, very fun build, especially with the new cards. I swear there's something with Stark, but I can't prove it. And it works either way with Martell, as usual. The Sun is a very good banner house.
Yeah, I've been fiddling around a little bit with that Stark pairing as well, and obviously I had the Lannister to the Rose that I took to King's, or Dag Nabbit, I keep saying that, to War of the Five King, that really didn't pay off the way I wanted it to. But I'm kind of feeling you on the Stark stuff. It really rounds out their intrigue icons well, gives them some versatility. Like, that pairing winds up with a lot of renown between, you know, their big unique characters, good bit of stand.
It really,
and I'm not saying this is the best play, but I am saying it's possible if you're going to run Gates of Winterfell in any of the banner combinations, this is the way to do it. If you're willing to use Baron the Maiden Fair to stack your own deck to make sure you get your draw triggers.
Yeah, don't do that. Tyrell doesn't hurt for draw. Tyrell doesn't need Gates. Like, the Mander is still one of my favorite draw locations, and then the Pleasure Barge is phenomenal.
Oh, the barge that we got in the first pack is just bonkers. Suddenly, between that and the Mander, I mean, it looks like Tyrell is the draw house.
I mean, and then you drop in, which is good, they have a lot of resources, right? It fits. But then you add in Support of the People, and they can go get their Mander, or if should they prefer, based on situation, Highgarden.
Right. Yeah, and I you definitely want to point out to folks, don't get the Pleasure Barge. It only triggers when you marshal it.
Yeah. Tyrell also leverages Varys really, really well. Like, if you can get turn one or two Varys off, I think with most decks you win, but with Tyrell it's really impressive because they have such good burst draw and economy. Like, in that kind of deck, even the Queen of Thorns makes sense because she just starts putting out characters so fast, and after you've already wiped the board, your opponent just can't recover.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, again, as we go, like, you know, right now they already kind of really handle the five or more strength really well. If we get more cards that are triggering on that win by five or more strength.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's also like speaks to the pairing of Stark when you're talking about the military and they have the ability to win military with the five strength and you pairing them up, like there are a lot of abilities or a lot of ways to win by five strength.
Agreed. All right, key cards. Randall is phenomenal. He's the single best rush card in the game right now. The Mander is obviously key, as are the Pleasure Barge when we get there. Marjorie is unreal good. I've seen people stick Seal of the Hand on her above other choices and just had her potential six pump be a nightmare to math through in a challenge phase.
that sounds awful.
Yeah. Like, just the threat of activation on that is just like you sit there and you go, I can't. And Highgarden is fantastic at making someone like Balon or Tywin matterless. They're either using them in a challenge that they don't really care about, or they're not getting them for something like Put to the Sword. Highgarden is so good and so underrated. And other cards that you think are key?
I mean, key out of that, I really feel the Knight of Flowers has been a star for me. Just the way strength is here in the game right now, unless, I mean, joust type effects like this where you can only have one attacker and one defender were really solid in first edition. And kind of three strength was that sweet spot there. In second edition, five, right where the Knight of Flowers is, seems to be the sweet spot here. I mean, unless you're up against a Bob or a Tywin, like, he's a challenge win, you know?
And he's right outside of the range of help. Trakaris.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm.
I gotta say, I've really liked Bear and the Maiden Fair. Especially like in the like mid or late game, in sort of like if I needed to seal off the opponent, say I'm gonna look and see what, because they're, if I've got board control and I want to ensure that they're not about to draw, you know, because right now where we're at, there are bombs in everyone's deck, and if they get them, they change the game immediately. And the ability to just say, you're not going to get your bomb and I'm in control is really nice. Or on the flip side, if I need it, the ability for me to just dig a little bit and look for it.
I dig. Mm-hmm. No, I think it's a really good card. I think stacking your opponent's deck is really good early in the game. My concern is later in the game when every card is good, is that it's just, it becomes eh.
I mean, that's when you probably do go ahead and flip it and dig for whatever you specifically need out of your deck, right?
I mean, sure, but since Much and More is coming, like at that point, you just Much and More.
Yeah, that's technically not going to be the name this time around, listeners. It's was a Gift from the Arbor or something along those lines, right?
Yeah, so it's revealed the top four cards of you and your opponent's deck. Choose one card.
Each opponent.
For each opponent, sure, whatever. Stop acting like
me. Kneel your faction card to do it.
Yeah, but it's no gold, right?
Yeah, I believe it was free. Yep.
So reveal the top four cards of everyone's deck. Choose one for that person to get. So give yourself the best of those cards, your opponent the worst of those cards. It's fantastic. It seems like it's not going to be great, and I believe Will gave it a shitty rating when it came up in 1.0. Mock.
Yeah, very possibly. Who knows? But yeah, it's crazy how much just draw and card advantage type stuff and cheap events that Tyrell looks like they're getting. I may be delving a little ahead into, you know, what they do and what will they do sections, but it looks like they are going to be the card... I guess I should say disadvantage king to Lannister's card disadvantage.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah.
So, and I may be horribly wrong here, but would Bear and the Maiden Fair, wouldn't that still be the more versatile choice, though, between those two events?
It's searching one more card down, but it's also giving you a card.
Yeah, I guess the ability to stack what the draw is going to be. Instead of saying this is a singular event in which we're going to go and find a card, I'm now saying the framework action of the game, I'm going to decide what you're going to get within that framework action. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or what I'm going to get. I don't know. That for me, and again, like I may be horribly wrong here, but that just seems like a stronger play to me.
It depends how much you want that extra card, and it depends like if you're about to draw immediately after.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah, the timing of your draw after that is really going to affect things. And part of that, I suppose, depends really on what you're digging for. If it's something that can be used then, if you've got the draw for it, or if you don't, you know, need it or are able to use it, say, till the next marshalling or something.
Mm-hmm. I guess I just really like the ability for Bear and the Maiden Fair to sort of like script a segment of the game for me. Like if I say, boy... turn three, I really want, you know, wish I could do these two cards or my opponent draw these two cards or whatever. I have the ability to somewhat script that. Now, obviously, I'm not digging through their whole deck and finding the exact two cards I want, but I don't know. That just is really enticing for me, I guess.
Fair enough. Okay. So what do they do? They rush, control a bit, pump strength, find answers. What are they going to do? Draw and crap out big guys. Which seems like it's going to be really powerful in 2.0. Would it surprise anyone to see them be the top house by this time next year?
I'm not sure it would surprise me. I mean, it looks like they're getting and going to be expanding more on, you know, two of the themes that allowed Lannister to be top dog in first edition forever. You know, draw and income. So, and to a side extent, the intrigue challenge. It's debatable, I think, and we've gone over some of that on the show, how that pairs up versus first edition. But I think as the pool expands, it will probably trend more towards the way it was in strength in the first edition of the game.
But draw matters, and being able to find what you need, find what you want.
I hear draw equals win.
I think it's draw plus efficiency equals win in 2.0. But yeah, like it's now an equation. It's deep.
D plus I.
Yeah. So some sleeper cards.
Just going to I for income. Sleeper. That one's tricky.
I think Paxter and Olenna's Cunning are two of the best cards in the game that no one plays.
Really? Man, I mean, I like Paxter, but I don't know
Paxter.
If he should be, you know, under the radar, really.
Yeah, he's
maybe that's the catch. Maybe I feel like he should be above the radar and other people don't agree.
You never hear when people are talking about major cards or key cards, Paxter's name. You get Marjorie. I think Paxter's the best card in Terrell. The best character, anyway. Their draws, their best cards. But, like, I don't think anything is better than Paxter. 4 for 3 yeah. plus 1 gold makes events cheaper. Just phenomenal.
Well, and that's an interesting thing with what we have in the Tyrell pool and with what we've seen coming up are these zero cost events, which means his ability doesn't really help those events much.
Sure, but
so,
not going to drop put to the Sword and Tears list, so...
No. That what I was just going to say is, so it means you either look at, say, one cost neutral events to turn them, you know, free, or Banner House one cost events if they're not loyal. But it does, I think, mean you have to be careful what order you play your zero cost Tyrell events in, so that you don't accidentally eat up his discount.
Yeah, it's the first per phase, though, right?
No, it's per round.
Oh, is it? That's a little annoying. Okay.
Yeah. So you do need to be careful. I mean, I really like it, but it just means you have to be paying attention to the order you play your events in.
Fair enough. It's so good with Put to the Sword, though.
Oh, yeah. Even Tears. I mean, a free Tears.
Yeah. Or in Fealty, that Olenna's Cumming that's functionally free.
Oh, yeah, with the reduction.
Kneel the House cards, and then you just get to, like, go search something, and there's no wrong answer for searching things. Like, you can't get characters. Okay, I'll go get draw.
Yeah, I mean, they've got something really solid, I think, to go get as any card type right now. So, like, what is your opponent's kind of default answer of what to not search for?
It's generally events. People say events. So you go get, like, I've gotten to get Milk or Varys, I think, most often with neutral stuff.
Yeah.
And in-house, I've gotten Randall and Queen of Thorns. And, like, I've gotten right when I have left or left when I have right just for shits and giggles. Mm-hmm. Like, if I know the opponent doesn't have a lot of stealth.
Yeah. Well, Corey, I think we've drowned you out here a little bit recently. got any wisdom to lay on us?
So I do have another stupid question.
I don't think your questions are stupid. But.
Well, okay.
you don't believe me, but I
don't know. I don't. But so let me ask you, talking about the timing of Paxter, because this is guaranteed a mistake I will make, is playing a zero cost when I shouldn't have. So I don't know. I think his wording is like reduce the cost of the first event you play that round, right? What if you play an event, say, in the action window and draw, and then marshal him? Is it the event that's after that that gets the reduction? Well, since you've already played an event that round?
You know, I probably need to double check how card memory works in second edition, as far as the game state goes. As a general rule, I don't think that cards have memory, you know, say if their ability is triggered and then they get bounced and replayed or something. But when it's looking at the game state itself, I believe it would be aware of an event having been played previously, but I need to double check that. Do you know it offhand, Aaron?
No, not 100%.
Are we double checking by looking up the...
You are.
RRG or just messaging Hines?
let's leave this for him to answer in the comments, and then you guys can discuss in the comments.
Brilliant.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I love it.
He's always good to pipe up with a rules answer there.
Yes.
Whatever the answer is, I'm certain I'll still play it wrong at least once. So.
I've lost games for ridiculously stupid reasons. So, like, don't stress it. It happens. Like, the idea is to try not to make it a habit, but at least, like, once per every 2 tournaments or so I lose a game where I'm just like, what the fuck was that? All right. Yeah, so that is our run through the houses, what they're good with, what they're not good with. Next week, unless we get a new chapter pack, which is certainly possible because I think there's very few cards left for this next chapter pack, want to do a deck building episode?
I think that would be lovely. Been itching to get into that a bit more.
Yeah, so we will build a deck. If you have any requests, let us know. Otherwise, we're totally going to build Lannister.
If you're letting us know about decks in the comments, do make sure you're clarifying whether you're talking about the deck building or Aaron's Red Saturday deck.
Yeah, I'm totally going to banner to whatever house you guys decide. Except, I think the only house that you can't vote for is Night's Watch, unless I'm going...
I don't think it's fair to give the listeners restrictions. Like,
I mean, they
that.
Can vote for it, but when I accidentally don't count those votes, don't say they weren't warned.
I don't think they get any, or that you get any say in the counting. I think I get to tally.
Dude, you can count, but like, there's still my cards that I have to sleeve. Like, unless you're gonna fly to New York.
There's going to be a groundswell for Night's Watch. It will be unanimously Night's Watch.
So I'm hoping it's like Targaryen or Stark or something, but like it'll be what it is. I have a version of Lannister to everything, I think, sitting on my computer. I've played all except Targaryen and Night's Watch. Is that true? I think so.
Welcome to Props and Slops. Man, nobody's got anything that they're just really wanting to jump on. Am I the only one desperately wanting to talk about Fallout 4 right now?
Oh, God, I hate you so much. I hate you. I hate everyone out there who has it right now. I hate all of you.
Hate.
No, all I have is hate.
Well, we've known that for a while, I think, around
it's just,
here.
I keep it deep down inside, and I'll release it on the throne's table.
Exactly, in one brilliant tournament-winning flurry.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yep, that's it. Now, you do remember that I built a White Book agenda deck 4 times, right? Before you mentioned tournament winning. Hey,
yeah, I mean, where do you think we got the podcast name?
You were so impressed. I'm going to prop myself for how well I built that White Book agenda that you guys named the podcast after my efforts.
Yeah. Yeah, now you understand how it works. So, aside from that, Fallout 4, solid game. I haven't made it very far in it, but like I already love the kind of open-ended exploration. And as I've said when we've discussed Mass Effect before, given the opportunity, I will strip mine every world in the galaxy. And now Fallout 4 has given me that capability, adding this new system to build fortifications and improvements for settlements, and thus needing to scavenge everything you can possibly find in the wasteland to do that with, is a phenomenal addition to the game and something that I'm going to blow entirely too much time on without ever actually doing anything related to the story. So there goes all of my other spare time.
I want to prop my wife because it's her birthday on Saturday.
Nice.
All but right.
I also want to prop Weird Coincidences because we went away for my birthday as the last Sentinels expansion came out. And Thursday, yesterday, for you guys who are listening, the next Sentinels mini expansion came out, the one with the Scholar. So, like, they're just waiting for major events in my life. So I expect the next major one to be when I have a baby.
Whoa. I'm really glad that Greater Than is kind of just basing their output on your life here.
Yeah, it's Glazer Than Games.
Did you share your Google Calendar with them? Is that what happened?
They hacked me. They're just all about my life.
Yeah.
More props?
More props. I'm going to throw some actually out to Arrow Season 3, which we just picked up watching on Netflix. Now, I wonder if part of it is because I sat down and just binged it. I heard a lot of people complaining about it when they were watching it last season, week to week. We've, you know, essentially binged it over the last 3 weeks, and I dug it pretty well. Trying to avoid any huge spoilers for anybody that is planning on watching through it, but Malcolm Merlyn, and of course, you know, by extension, John Barrowman, the actor playing him, is such a fantastic villain. The last little scene of that last episode was just so great.
I want to prop. Have you guys ever heard of Bali Water?
Bali Water?
Yeah, it's like B-A. Don't ask me how it's pronounced. Bali. Everyone I've heard keeps calling it Bali Water, but it's like B-A-I-5, and it's frick delicious. Yeah, I know.
Wait, you're pronouncing the number 5 as L-I? Is that what
I have no idea. But, like, it's literally lowercase B, lowercase A, an I with a leaf on the top, and then a 5. But I've heard, like, 8 people call it Bali Water, and I was like, Bay Water, and I thought that was stupid. Bay's Water, something like that. But, like, whatever it is, it's freaking, like, it's, like, my new favorite drink. I now order it on Amazon in bulk.
Wow. Yeah. I feel like out here in the Midwest, we're missing the Bali Water craze.
The revolution.
I'm the only person on Earth that buys it in bulk, but I think it's super delicious. Like, the coconut one especially.
I may have to order some and bring it to the tournament this weekend, Will, just so we can...
The pre-tournament drink is Monster Rehab, because you should always be hungover right before a tournament.
God,
I actually really dig the Monster Rehabs.
Yeah, they taste like Arnold Palmer.
Yep. Not sure I want to know why you know what Arnold Palmer himself tastes like, but...
He's delicious, yeah. And zesty. Let's move on. More props, more slops. We don't have any slops so far. Slop something.
Slop something.
I know what I want. Yeah,
I'm gonna slop the police officer who pulled me over this morning and pulled me out of my car with his hand on his gun.
Wow.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
I see police.
Yeah.
Oh jeez.
Yeah. Screw that guy, right?
Yeah. Geez. Which vehicle were you driving? The truck.
The truck. Yeah.
Oh. Right. I do want to prop Stalik this weekend. Hell yeah, Stalik. I wish I could go. I'll never go. But every year I cry inside because I'm not there.
Me too.
I mean, people keep posting about how Sandy can't handle his booze. And, you know, whatever. Like, I just need to show them what drinking is. The Polish know. The Polish know.
Wait, you're Polish?
No, but I'm actually adopted into a bunch of metas, but one of the metas I'm adopted into is the Polish meta, because we drank like freaking monsters in London. Like,
okay.
Well, like metas are falling by the wayside, and we're like, let's go drink more. So eventually we all passed out, because that's what happens when you just drink more and more, but no one ever stopped.
All right. Well, I think that's all I've actually got for props and slops right now.
Yeah. One more thing. So a final prop to our French meta friends. Glad you guys are all safe and stay strong. Good luck at Stalik.
Agreed. That closes another chapter of the White Book.
I told you, if you put anything on that teleprompter, Will will read it. You've got to get rid of that question mark.
you so read that as a question. I want to slap Beyond the Wall for taking unnecessary shots at us. Stay clap.
Stay clap. Aaron, I thought you had just said that I trained you to be a better man.
But I didn't curse this time. There was no, like, mocking how tiny their Canadian penises are. Like, I was so well behaved for it. I thought you might let go.
You're going to have to start sneaking those statements in when someone else is on a long diatribe, just like under your breath, where Will can't edit them out.
That'd be great, yeah. Like, I was so nice about it. There's no tiny little Canadian penises that look fiendishly dwarfish on John's gigantic body. Like, come on. It was so nice.